coming to get you, Barbara.
I don't know what you come to do, but I come to praise name.
Because you'll never be anything but a common frump whose father lived over a grocery store and whose mother took in washing.
Hey, y'all, welcome to Who Shot Ya? It's your boy. I'm your host, Ricky Carmona. Who Shot Ya? This is the movie podcast that isn't just three straight white guys. In the studio with me, I got my man to the right, rocking the very close to be Freddy Krueger sweater.
A little bit.
Yeah. You almost there. I'm feeling that. Film reviews editor at The Wrap, my man, Alonzo Duralde. What is good with you, sir?
Season 3 of One Day at a Time.
Okay, here we go.
Just dropped on Netflix, and I watched the whole thing in a day. And,
at a time.
Exactly. Thank you. Yep. And just the best show right now. I mean, I know everybody's all into their big, fancy, prestige TV, and this is a three-camera sitcom, which is like the least cool format ever. But goddamn, this show is just so smart and so funny. And, you know, Norman Lear, God bless him, is still with us. And he's involved with this show, you know, with obviously, you know, a new crew of creators and actors and writers. But it has that classic Norman Lear thing of like, they hit hard, they do the tough subjects, they do the topical subjects, but they never lose the joke. Mm. Like, they never stop and have a very special episode. It's always funny, no matter how dark things might get. You know, Rita Moreno.
The queen,
Reina. We should all cross ourselves when we say her name.
Absolutely.
Yeah, just the best show y'all need to be watching, One Day at a Time. Go back to season one if you haven't, but it's so great.
Yes, yes. And One Day at a Time, it's about a Cuban family. It's got a Cuban writer on that show, Janine Brito, who I want her to be a guest on this show, so we gotta fucking put that out in the universe and make that happen, please.
She has a cameo on this season, actually, as as somebody's lesbian sister.
Okay,
And I think we've been tweeting at each other. So yes, come on the show.
Yeah, yeah. I've been wanting to get her on this show for a minute. So hopefully we can make that happen. I am very glad because you got me on this show. Ooh. And I got to one point in season two, and then I just kind of like stopped watching for a minute. And I had this fear because everybody was talking about like there's a great episode coming up, but it's going to like really like hit you in the heart. And I'm just a real pessimistic fool.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, that's the episode where Rita Moreno dies. I'm sure it has to be. That's what it has to be. But then season three, she's
here
back
she
in
is.
The air. There
yes.
she is. And I was
so...
like, yes, yes.
So now you got to go back and finish season
exactly.
two. And then, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, you see what I'm doing. You see my mental math, son. Oh, damn. There go that girl again. Yes. Our other co-hosts here. I mean, it is always a pleasure when she's here. Producer, film festival programmer, Drea Clark. In the building!
Yay!
Drea, what is good with you?
Well, first off, things are automatically better for me because I don't live under the rain cloud you apparently cover yourself with, Ricky Carmona.
Not all the time. Not all the time.
I was going to say.
Not all the time. Every once in a while, it creeps
out. You smile more than anybody I know.
My
teeth
smile. I smile so much, my teeth smile. It hurts.
It's just your shark eyes on top of him.
It is.
He's happy go funky.
Oh, Jesus. Shout out to my
Prince,
DJ, happy go funky.
Yeah. Print the bumper stickers now. You guys, what's actually good for me, I think it's pretty significant when it comes to my film criticism and just knowledge of the world, and that's my addiction to skincare. And I feel like here on this film podcast,
yes.
we are not talking about skincare, skin products nearly enough.
Not enough.
And
not
so
at
I'm
all.
Happy to be bringing that energy. I do think it's important that you guys know that in real life, Ingu and I, that is number one, the only thing that we talk about is this is not a joke. Like, I have pages and pages of back and forth between us about skincare. So, I'm super into it. I have like a full, like, 10 product ritual, different products morning and evening.
Okay.
And I've also started crafting my own facial spray, like a mister throughout the day.
Okay.
Because I like to treat my face like the produce section in a Gelson's.
Oh, yes.
Like just...
Do you make the sound effect of the thunder?
Okay. I make a little... And then people are looking at me and I'm like, oh, Oh, spray, spray, spray. Joke's on you. You thought I was going to look ridiculous after I made that thunder noise. But now I'm spraying my face. Yeah, I'm super into skincare. It's my favorite thing.
When people ask me, describe Drea in one word, my default is usually creamy.
Okay, I know that was a joke, but I would honestly be honored.
Do you have brands? Like, do you have like go-to, like, hey, as soon as I walk in the...
Oh, no, I have a whole, like, I have different, I do BHAs in the evening, okay. AHAs in the morning.
I know what none of that means.
I have a retinol whole thing.
Okay.
I'm into serums. I have both essence and toner.
Okay.
No, it's a whole...
Whatever it is, it's working.
Oh, right. Thanks.
Ricky, what's good?
Oh, Jim, he's so good at that.
Man, he's got that shit in the chamber,
he
ready
really
to
is.
Go.
He
ready
really
to
is.
Go in the chamber. Oh, what is good is... I got a two-parter tonight. I finished this book that I was really into called The Fight by Norman Mailer, which is about Muhammad Ali's fight against George Foreman. And it was so great. I can't recommend it enough. I can't recommend it. Like, there's, I mean...
Reading Norman Mailer puts hair on your knuckles. He's so full of testosterone.
Oh, yeah.
There was times where I had to, like, go back and reread what I just read. Because, like, this is beautiful, but I have no idea what the fuck you just said right now. You know, like, my man doubles down on alliteration.
He took his while getting there.
Yeah, he really does. And it was great. The book was great. And, I've mentioned this on the show many times. I love the movie When We Were Kings. Cut to, I'm on Instagram the other day, and an Instagram account that I follow, they're based here out of LA. They're called Somos El Cine, and every once in a while they have movie screenings here, usually Latino movies that they showed. Just recently they showed Selena, and they had members of the cast there. Jacob Vargas was there. I went to a screening one night where they did Mi Familia. And some of the cast was there. On Saturday, they're going to have a screening of a movie called Our Latin Thing, which is a documentary about the Fania record label, which was like the big record label that was happening in like the late 60s, early 70s. That was all about like salsa music that was happening. That's not where we got Celia Cruz and Willie Colon and Hector Lavoe, but that is where they all... That was kind of like the...
Latino Stax.
Thank you, my
nice.
Man. See what I'm saying? Rocking the motherfucking Freddy Krueger sweater and coming in with facts.
He's
yo.
Haunting
coming
your dreams and your reality. Yeah.
But I found, I finished this book. I see this thing, this post on Instagram, and this Our Latin Thing is directed by Leon Gast, who is the director of When We Were Kings.
Oh, nice.
So I am just like so hyped to go see this documentary on Saturday. And I can't wait to do it.
It's a preemptive what's good.
Yeah, it is. Hell yeah.
It's going to be good.
Anticipatory.
A friend of mine has already seen it, and he says, oh, Ricky, you are. It's going to be on. Azúcar. Tú sabes. All right. On today's episode, we are going to be talking about Leave No Trace, the Deborah Granik film. We are going to be taking a question from our Who Shot line. And as always, we'll have our staff picks at the end of the episode. But let's jump right into it, y'all, with our new segment, It A Dick, short for Is This Important? Do I Care? Here's how it works. We are all going to read news headlines, and any one of us can jump in by answering these two questions, Drea. You can just answer these two questions, Drea.
What are those questions?
Is this important?
Sure.
And do I care?
Got it.
Okay. And why do we eat the bitter herb?
This first one is I'm looking forward to like two movies, and two of the biggest movies I'm looking forward to this year. I can't believe they're on Netflix. One is Call Me Dolomite, which is the Craig Brewer Dolomite right. movie starring Eddie Murphy. And the other one is The Irishman, Martin Scorsese's next gangster movie that stars Robert De Niro, Al Pacino. They've been working on this movie for a minute. There's still no release date. But according to a new interview on Yahoo with the Queen editor, the GOAT, greatest of all time, Thelma Schoonmaker, half the movie is going to include a de-aged, younger-looking version of Robert De Niro and Al Pacino. Now, she said this quote here: we are youthifying the actors in the first half of the movie, and then the second half of the movie, they play their own age. The people behind the, quote, youthifying effect in the film will be George Lucas's Industrial Light and Magic. So that's why the movie is taking so long, because they're doing this process here. Is this important to y'all? Do you all care? Are you looking forward to this movie?
I don't believe it exists. They've been promising this movie for so long now that I think it's an elaborate tax shell game.
This is the Don
the
Quixote.
It's the state main of movies.
Yes. it's springtime for Hitler, you know?
The day the clown died is what this
cried.
Is. Cried both, yeah.
He died too.
You haven't seen either
he
version.
Don't make it.
Yeah. You know, I think that we've seen this technology get a lot better. Like, mm-hmm. you go from Jeff Bridges and Tron Legacy, where it's kind of like, to then Michael Douglas in the first Ant-Man movie, and you're like, okay. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I could see where they could pull this off. I mean, you know, let's not forget, young De Niro once played young Marlon Brando.
See, I was just, that's actually yes. the exact example I was going to make, but for voting against it, because... Move the fuck aside, old man. Like, those are juicy roles. Robert De Niro did. He got a big, big break playing a younger version of a very well-known and respected actor and got to show his chops, got to make a voice for himself and build a career from there. It's easily traceable back to that role. And the idea of this isn't small. Half of the movie is them, like, what that could do to... In terms of, like, financing a movie. Mm-hmm. This is the most stupidly expensive movie for this, too.
The budget's over $140 million.
I mean, for a gangster movie, shut up. Not worth it.
Take those dots off your face, Bobby D. Yes.
But the idea
of... This is the avatar of gangster movies.
Like, Scorsese is getting to make what he wants to make. Those two dudes are not, like... Oh, if only someone would respect us and give us a role. Like, they've played every genre now, too. Mm-hmm. They can get this movie made, and what they could have done as a launch pad for two younger actors to play them. I think it's bullshit. I also think I'm all for the CGI of it. Like, I like technology expanding. And I think, actually, I remember the Robert Downey Jr. in... Iron Man 3.
Yes.
Like the younger version
correct.
Of himself.
Yeah. Oh, right,
like
right.
that was maybe one of the best. And again, similar to these two guys, because they had so many movie references of him at that age that they could look at as they
Wait,
would.
Was it Iron Man 3 or was it like Captain America?
It might have been.
It might have been one. It might have been like Age of Ultron.
Yeah.
It was just
oh, it was
one
Age
of
Ultron.
Those.
It was. Okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But the. So I get it. I know it's there, and I'm excited for technological advances. I don't want to sound like a total Luddite, but I do think for cinema, I would be more interested in seeing two people take on what the... Like, I'm more interested in an acting challenge than a technological one.
Sure.
And I think, you know, this is a good time before this movie comes out, assuming it ever does. Take a look at it.
You think this will come out when Red Sonja comes
basically,
out.
Basically, yeah. There's a really good documentary called Henri-Georges Clouzot's Inferno. And Clouzot had directed The Wages of Fear and Diabolique, and he was like hot, top of his game. So he makes this movie Inferno with seemingly like limited resources and, you know, or unlimited resources and unlimited time and like all the technological, you know, stuff of that era that he wants and all the time he needed to make it. And he never finished it, you know? And so I think it's like there's something about what I worry with these auteurs getting these endless checks from the Annapurnas and the Netflixes of the world is that they're just never going to finish these damn movies, you know?
Yeah.
It's like the joke that Hugh Hefner used to say, he gave Harvey Kurtzman an unlimited budget to create this humor magazine, and then he exceeded it.
Well, this movie also has Joe Pesci, Harvey Keitel, Anna Paquin, Bobby Cannavale, Ray Romano, Stephen Graham, Jesse Plemons. I'm hyped for it. That's all I have to say.
I'll believe it when I see it.
Also, it's called The Irishman and stars Robert De Niro
and
Al Pacino, the most Irish actors in the game.
And Leonardo DiCaprio.
Oh, right. Okay. I don't know if you guys watched the Grammys this week, but they had the new trailer for the Guy Ritchie-directed live-action Aladdin. Fun fact, I don't think I knew it was Guy Ritchie.
I'm just the learning that.
I was like, wait, my head was not, the synapses were not firing those connections.
You know, Disney musical.
Sure, right? Family Story, Guy Ritchie.
Yeah.
And obviously the highlight of the trailer was at the end of it when Will Smith appears as the blue, heavily CGI genie. The reaction to the genie's appearance ranged from shock to laughter. Mm. That's the full range. Jackson McHenry of Vulture compared his look to the thumb people in the Spy Kids films. But even better is the comparison to David Cross's character, Tobias Funke, trying out for the Blue Man Group in Arrested Development, because he blew himself, you guys. And is this important? Do you care?
I mean... I've never seen the original Aladdin. I'm not yet. Come on. Dre, you can't be surprised when I say these things.
The amount of times you've talked to me about The Incredibles, I just assume you've, like, watched the gamut of animated...
No, it's The Incredibles is what I love because it's a superhero. It's basically...
Okay, okay.
An original version of
and
a superhero
no songs.
Movie. And there's no
You're right.
And they don't
Might
sing.
Be. I don't know. I can show you the world.
Now, if Will Smith is going to, you know, do I Can Show You the World to the Fresh Prince of, you know, the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air beat, then, you know, I
there is no way this movie does not have Will Smith rapping.
Oh, absolutely.
I'll give you my cats if that
absolutely.
Doesn't happen.
Yeah, I know. Somebody... It's My Friend Like Me is the big genie number, right?
Right? Yeah. Oh, there's no... It for sure... It like breaks down. It's like, da-da-da. Let me tell you why you should have a friend like me.
Exactly.
Like, so...
Let me tell you about the time, right? Yeah. I mean, he looks very weird. Like, he looks like he ate all of the Smurfs.
Well,
and then did all of the steroids. And then Guy Ritchie was like, action!
Or no, he chews the gum in Willy Wonka with the blueberry pie.
Yeah, he's got a Veruca. Is it Veruca
salt?
No,
Viola Beauregard.
Yeah.
this whole, what it's really calling to mind here is, like, I didn't think about this so much when they first announced it, but now that I see him in the genie thing, it's like, you're stepping into this Robin Williams role, and the reason that people... loved the movie and specifically loved the genie is because Robin Williams was doing Robin Williams in animated form. It was like this crazy explosion of non sequiturs the way that he did. And that's a very specific energy signature.
Yeah.
And Will Smith is something else. Like, he's also a popular movie star and he's also beloved, but he's not that. And he's not
Manic.
He's way too cool for the genie as we know him. So he's going to have to completely rebrand this character to be more Will Smith, I make this look good, you know. but at the
I
same time.
I make this blue skin look good.
Exactly. Yeah, because he's not good. But anyway. Yeah, I don't know.
No,
I don't know.
100%.
Robin Williams also had the benefit of like the animation.
Oh, yeah.
With animation, you can do anything.
Yes,
I mean it's whatever your imagination can think of.
Yeah.
This week Sean Penn wrote an essay for Deadline where he lavishes praise upon A Star Is Born, in particular the talent and direction of Bradley Cooper. But Sean Penn is also upset because he writes that he believes the film won't win any Oscars because the Academy thinks he's young. He'll have plenty of opportunities. Penn argues that there are many really good films and performances nominated this year. There are also many perishable trend pieces that win or lose will be lost to memory, and in a fair world, A Star Is Born sweeps the awards. Is this important? Do you care? Do you agree?
Sit down, Sean Penn.
Thank you.
Shut up, Sean Penn.
Even Bradley Cooper's like, don't help.
Yes, please stop helping. This was so obnoxious. Like, I remember I read 20 tweets or thoughts about this before I read the actual letter, and then I read it and was like, you dork. What a dork. How is this guy ever cool? You would never get to be Spicoli now. I mean, other than age, but like, how uncool are you, man?
He plays the teacher now. I can't remember what the name of the teacher
is.
He plays Mr. Hand now.
Aloha,
that's who
Mr.
He is.
Hand. But the phrase in it that infuriated me, other than just the douchebaggery of it, the phrase perishable trend pieces, to me was like, oh, is that your A-list actor of like saying virtue signaling or some other like,
obnoxious. A hip liberal for SJW, you know.
Like, what's a trend? Do you think Black Panther is a trend piece? Like,
there's something about the whole undercurrent of this is like, won't someone think of the handsome white guy actor turned director? because no one came out to defend me when the Indian runner was overlooked by the Academy.
Oh, yeah, yeah. He was like, thou shall not pass. Pay attention, Bradley Cooper. I just think, too, and I feel like Bradley Cooper had a stupid response to of saying, like, I can't remember if it was before or after this, of how he was embarrassed that he wasn't nominated for an actor. Oh. And again, as a film programmer and the amount of first-time directors that we see, that I'm like, do you know how many people I know that I think of as more talented than you that can't get distribution?
But that was, to be fair, that quote was part of a larger thing that he felt like he had let down the people in the film.
Okay, yes. you're right.
That did get pulled out of context to make it sound horrible, but it's still sort of like, maybe
I also think he did
that,
a good job. I don't want to shit on him. I enjoyed that movie and think he did a good job, but for like I guess it's the Sean Penn of it is that just full expectation, like, and as you know, a pet peeve of mine is like the consideration of what's considered an Oscar worthy film, and having someone like Sean Penn, who is the heart and soul of this very stagnant definition of what's considered an Oscar worthy, like, no, you don't get to pick that anymore, man.
This is full on white people nonsense.
Go make an Irish movie with a bunch of Italians. Go do that.
Just no more The Last Face. Worst movie ever.
All right, we are going to take a break. We'll be right back after we hear from another one of our Max Fun podcasts.
Greetings, I am Plek Dexsetter, contacting you from the Zik Squadron, which is, frankly, sort of crappy, but I'm here on a heroic mission with my trusty crew, C-53.
Heroic feels like an exaggeration.
Okay,
part.
Sure. And Security Officer Dar.
Plek, don't put me in your stupid recording.
Well, and we're all traveling aboard our trusty starship, the Bargerian Jade. Bargie.
What? Sorry, I'm awake.
It's fine.
I was just flying while asleep.
Hey there, this is Alden Ford. I play Plek, and we are so excited to announce that our podcast, Mission to Zix, is now part of the Maximum Fun Network. Our third season launches on Max Fun on March 20th. Binge seasons 1 and 2 right now. That's Mission to Zix, ZYXX.
Welcome back to Hushaya. I'm your host, Ricky Carmona. With me in the studio is...
Drea Clark.
Alonzo Duraldi.
Today we are talking about the film Leave No Trace. Now, can I just say right off the bat, it's very strange to be talking about this movie and not have April Wolf with us. Right? This is like the moment when Oasis recorded that MTV Unplugged and then Liam Gallagher didn't sing.
Yes.
And I was like, God damn it, we are here to hear this person's voice.
Why don't we compare April to Liam Gallagher more? What are we doing with our time?
She is like, my Wonderwall.
I feel like Liam Gallagher would say tits to the glass on the regular.
Oh, no question.
100%.
But now, so why now? Why this movie, Ricky? You picked it.
I picked it because, I mean, the brand of our show, I feel, is, like I said earlier, I mean, we're not straight white guys who are talking about movies. And if we have an opportunity to be talking about a movie that is directed by a woman, and this is a movie that... Part of the big thing I heard was, how did this not get nominated for Best Picture? How did Deborah Granik not get nominated for Best Director? And
Amen.
It's just like, well, then I want to see this movie and I want to talk about it and I want to make sure other people know about it. So that was really my go-to on that. I mean, I know when we recorded last week, I gave everybody options, but it was, you know, the options were... all things that I wanted to see, but I really was interested in seeing Leave No Trace. So that's why I picked this.
Cool.
Now, Leave No Trace, for those of you who haven't seen it yet, it's streaming on Amazon Prime right now. It is about, it's directed by Deborah Granik, as I said. It's about a father, played by Ben Foster, has a bit of a mysterious past. Him and his daughter, who is played by
Thomason McKenzie,
they are trying to live their lives peacefully in the woods of Portland. And then they are found by authorities, placed in an assisted living situation. And that's when the daughter starts to realize, I think I would rather start living in a normal home like a normal child does. And
on
the grid, as opposed to off the grid. But the father, we don't know what, we kind of get an idea that maybe he suffers from PTSD.
We know he's a veteran.
That he's a veteran. And this is causing him that he just can't... It seems like he just can't deal with structure. There's a lot of things going on in this movie. But, you know, he can't deal with structure. He can't deal with living, you know, in a home. So things change after they leave this assisted. Their relationship changes very much after they leave this assisted living housing. Alonzo, what number was this on your top 10 list?
This was my number 3.
This was your number 3.
I like this a lot, yeah.
This was on my top 10 as well.
You didn't have numbers.
I'm way too cool for numbers. we don't need roads.
it's interesting because this is a movie that doesn't hold your hand and spell everything out for you. Like the music isn't telling you how you're supposed to feel about things. And we glean things about these characters by the way the camera is observing them. So like we see the Ben Foster character go to the VA, and we see that the VA is overcrowded and overburdened and, you know, like barely has the time to sort of like check him in, deal with him. And you know, and then he immediately sells his meds to like somebody on the street to use the money to buy more supplies or whatever. So the movie's telling you things about him and about the system and stuff without having to tell you about them. Mm-hmm. And like he at one point gets a job working on a Christmas tree farm where these helicopters bring the trees in from deep in the forest. And just the look that he gets on his face when he has to hear those really loud helicopters tells you all you have to know about the PTSD and about what he's endured and how he deals with the world now, you know. So, yeah, I love the subtlety of this movie, and I love when a movie assumes that I'm paying attention. And assumes that I'm going to get it and I don't have to have everything sort of underlined and, you know, pointed to and, you know, expositoried in some, you know, conversation. Like this, you get what you need to get just by looking at the people and what they're doing.
It really forces you to pay attention in like the first 20 minutes. There's dialogue in it, but it's a lot of just kind of like really conversational dialogue that is like, you know, hey, I need this thing. Hey, you know, it's how, if you were to put those words in a screenplay, it wouldn't look like the most amazing writing in the world.
Right.
It would be very sparse. And also the way the movie is presented, I was like, all right, I mean, this, it can be post-apocalyptic right now. It can be, I just had no idea where it was, where we were.
Until the outside world
comes
in.
Until the rest of the world shows up. Absolutely. Absolutely. Trey, what did you think?
Well, this one, I don't know if you remember, if you think way back to a year ago when we were just coming out of Sundance and talking about our favorites, this was the film that I mentioned from Sundance of 2018. And so not to repeat myself, but to repeat myself, one of the things that stands out to me about this, and Deborah Granick's previous film, Winter's Bone, had a similar construct to it, which is pretty unusual. This is a film that manages to be dramatic and rich in world, but doesn't really have villains, and also is really only an A storyline. There's not, in one of the references that I'll let you make later, like oftentimes in movies like this, there's something comes up, like when they join society again, Tom, the daughter, would be discovered to be like a musical prodigy or a genius, and like a teacher would come in and be like, she really needs the benefit of the, and do you know what I mean? It would be that kind of struggle.
Michelle Pfeiffer would come in with some Bob Dylan lyrics.
Exactly. And it's not just anything, but the primary and almost central and only focus is on this father and this daughter and the choices they're making and how it affects their relationship and their lives. And there's not the big outside forces. The outsides that come in are just, again, around that central premise, which is really unique. And to do that and to still make it be as dense with emotion and drama and tension as it is, I mean, that's why it's something that I think should be recognized.
Yeah. You hit on something really hard there, the word choices. To me, like, this is a movie that's about choices, like the choices that he's made that put them in their living situation that we don't really know about, again, because, you know, things are very sparse. The choices that they have to live with right now that they're in this situation, and then the choice that she makes at the end of the movie. You know, like, it's a real kind of, you live with these people, you're with them. And I was very kind of into, I didn't like Winter's Bone, I'm going to say that. I did not enjoy Winter's Bone, but I like now that she's made 3 movies.
Yeah.
But I like that it seems like her library is showing, like, She is showing us worlds that we're not used to seeing. You know, Winter's Bone takes place in the Ozarks. Is that right? Winter's Bone is in the Ozarks.
Down to the Bone is about a woman dealing with overcoming addiction. And that was actually, you know, Thomas and Mackenzie people are talking about because she's extraordinary in this. But like Winter's Bone is the movie that gave us Jennifer Lawrence. And Down to the Bone is the movie that gave us Vera Farmiga.
Right.
So oh, that's right. So Granick has a real eye for new talent.
Yeah. And I love the idea of like, yeah, just showing us like these women. Living in this world where they're just the obstacles that they have to go against. Now, I haven't seen the movie with Vera Farmiga, but they're just so much responsibility is like placed on them. And at least in Leave No Trace, Ben Foster isn't necessarily wrong.
Right.
Mm-hmm. He's trying to do the best, what he thinks is the best for his daughter.
Yeah.
And I loved seeing that. I loved being put in seeing how that relationship is going to play out and never being like, oh, just shut up, dude. You feel bad for her. I was very goddamn sympathetic to her having to live like this. But I never felt like Ben Foster was trying to intentionally put her in harm's way.
He's trying to be a good father. In real life, people are doing their best, and they mean well, and they are trying to cope the best that they can, and if they are bringing somebody along with them in that, they are thinking that they're doing it for all the best reasons. So, yeah, it's like what Ray was saying. The drama here is so humane because it's not like there are these outside forces acting upon them or someone is acting in bad faith. It's just that he's damaged and is trying to cope with the world the best way he can. And she reaches a stage in which she realizes maybe I can find my own path and I don't have to follow him on his journey. And I don't necessarily have to fix him, but I also don't necessarily have to stay with him either. You know, and we were talking beforehand about a couple of other movies that this reminded us of Sidney Lumet's Running on Empty.
Yes.
For sure. You know, where you have River Phoenix kind of reaching an age where he has to decide, do I stay with my fugitive parents or do I, you know, re-enter society? And then also the film Tumbleweeds that was so great, which was
I'm not familiar with that one. What's that about?
That was, weirdly, this is the guy who went on to direct, like, Warrior and...
I saw Warrior.
Yeah, Warrior's great. But this is totally, like, the opposite. It's who's the... Oh, Janet McTeer.
Amy Adams.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm thinking of Junebug.
Right.
Janet McTeer.
Janet McTeer plays the mom, and she got an Oscar nomination for it. And it's about this woman who sort of like is very nomadic, and she'll get involved with these relationships with men. And the second that they get troublesome or threaten to become too serious, she's off. And she has a daughter, and she drags the daughter along with her from place to place to place. And it's the kind of thing where, like, they'll stop at a gas station, and the daughter will buy better homes and gardens. Because, like, their life is so transitory. So, like, the idea of an actual home that is hers permanently is sort of her dream, you know. And yeah, so it's that point again where, you know, where the mother and the daughter have to decide, like, all right, if you keep moving, I'm staying put. Like, yeah. I like where we are right now, and you either stay with me or you keep going.
I loved Running on Empty. And what I like that Leave No Trace says that's different than Running on Empty is I feel like in Running on Empty, Judd Hirsch, who plays the father, is putting them in a bad position. He is being a stubborn father and is not letting his kids grow up and live their lives. Whereas opposed to in this, like I said before, I mean, not to repeat myself, Ben Foster is just doing the best that he can.
Well, not just the best that he can. I think that another difference between both of those that you referenced is Tom seems fine with the life they're leading until
she starts to get a taste of
something else. I don't feel like she's been unwillingly dragged or is, sort of obstinate about it or anything. Like, her father treats her well and is respectful of her. And when, you know, it's also nice, there's small nods to class in this as well, like socioeconomic status of he's doing things with no money that take care of her in a way that I think is more impressive parenting than a lot of people who are like, oh, my kids signed up in back-to-back. First they have synchronized swimming, and then we go to our flower arrangement class. And this is someone whose child gets care and attention and constant affirmation and skills. And then he's also been teaching her because she's not been in school. So, and they show her being tested and she's doing really well. So it's this idea too, that it's, that I liked the idea of parents who maybe aren't fulfilling all of that like checklist of like what an admirable parent would do, but who's doing a good job parenting even in these like unlikely circumstances.
And there's no judgment going on as well. I mean, my parents were my best parents. They in my mind, they did no wrong. They did as best they could and they fucking killed it, you know. And it's like, so I'm, when I see that situation happening, I'm not like, well, I'll tell you what my mom would have done.
Right.
You know, like it's not that world. And it's, that's not the, that's not, it, if looking at the movie that way would just, I think it would take away what the director was trying to
do.
Well, it's funny because like Dave and I reviewed this last summer on Linoleum Knife, and he talks, I'm not telling tales out of school, he often talks about the fact that he had a somewhat tumultuous childhood. You know, his parents divorced and there was a lot of moving around and instability. And so when he sees movies about children in an unstable environment, he says for him that it's like, you know, that the old horror movie line, the tagline of just keep telling yourself it's only a movie. You know, because I never have to do that in horror movies, but I always have to do it in movies like this because I start getting upset and I have to remind myself, no, I'm okay. I have a home to go to, you know. But as somebody who was in this sort of flux situation as a child, when he sees that in movies, it totally comes crashing back to him. Mm-hmm. So I don't think he's necessarily, I don't think he would be judging Ben Foster as a parent either, but I think the situation is one that creates anxiety for him because it summons up his own past.
Somebody wanted to talk as well about the script of this movie, about the screenwriting here.
I sort of touched on that. I have something that's not about the script.
Okay.
Although it's about the story, but one of the other things, not to brag, you guys, but I worked at a summer camp for 7 years and was very involved in canoeing and backpacking. And now I am a soft woman who's interested in skincare. But
and that explains all the lanyards you're wearing.
It really does. I brought a friendship bracelet for everybody. But as someone who did weirdly spend a lot of time in the woods at one point, the other thing that this film does is, and I think it actually sort of harkens back to what Ricky was talking about of needing a minute to get caught up to speed. And it's because their time in the woods is how most people's is, which isn't when you're out and you're camping. Like, you do have those moments of looking up and like, oh, this is, but these are people who live there. And so they're survivalists. It's more the idea of the functioning of it. And this was the most honest. I actually believed, I was like, oh, these people know how to set up a camp. And I mean, even the title, because Leave No Trace was not what the book was called that it's based on. And if you're familiar with minimal impact camping, Leave No Trace is the ethos that you leave a space looking the same or better as when you arrive. So you pack it in, pack it out, everything goes with you. And
take nothing but pictures, leave nothing but footprints.
Yes!
Nice.
And that idea and how that permeates what they're doing, because they're not camping, they're like hiding, you know, and how all of that works and how they make the space work for them. I've not seen that before. And so it's done so well, but it's also one of those things that it's so subtle, you don't necessarily think to reward it because it's so small to think, oh, they made it look like they're believably outdoors when they shot outdoors. But it's so much more than that.
I want to talk real quick about the performances because I think they're really extraordinary. Like, Foster is always so good. And in this one especially, I think, again, you know, we're left to read his face so often because he's not a real talky character. And he's just giving us volumes with just the minorest kind of blinks or you know, shrugs or whatever. You know, Thomasin McKenzie is another solid discovery, like so empathetic and open. And again, like does that thing. She's from New Zealand and you'd never know.
Is that right?
Her American accent is dead on.
Damn.
I talked to her for like 2 minutes at the Lafka dinner this year and she opens her mouth and I was like, oh God, right, I forgot. You're not her. You're you and you're a Kiwi.
But then just real quick,
Dale Dickey. Dale Dickey.
Oh, she's always
Can
good.
We just build a statue to Dale
and
Dickey?
And this is nice because it's the most like sympathetic she's often cast because she's someone who looks like a real person. So, right. Which is that just like sounds like the snidest comment I could ever make.
No, that's one of her strengths as an actor. Right. Yeah. She looks like a recognizable human being who's seen some shit.
Exactly. I think she was a lunch lady at my school. Yes. She just has that look to her.
Yeah, and because of that, she's often like a funny character piece. And this was such a... richer, more well-rounded.
The generosity that's kind of shining through her, yeah.
How Ben Foster is not nominated for an Oscar.
All the time.
Whether for supporting actor or lead actor. And now, I haven't seen Vice. And I hate being like, saying some shit if I haven't seen a movie. But Sam Rockwell was nominated for that, and I hear he's hardly in that movie, playing George Bush.
It's a pretty short performance, and frankly, he's rehashing the character that he played in Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
It was just kind of very, very bizarre to me.
Where is Ethan Hawke this year?
Once you go down that rabbit hole, absolutely. All right, let's wrap this up, y'all. We know what the answers are. Should people screen this? Well, you can't screen
it's
it,
not
right?
Really an
it's,
yeah,
you, yeah, yeah. You kind of have to stream it. Mm-hmm. If you can screen it, by all means, do. But in terms of if this is our red, yellow, green, screen it if you can, stream it if you must. But watch this movie; it's great.
Agreed. I would say the same thing, and I would also say that for April Wolf.
Yes.
Put two votes in.
Yes. Were she here, she would say it.
This was not necessarily it didn't live up to what I wanted, but I recommend this movie to anyone out there. I thought it's a well made movie, and stream it if you can. It's I'm trying to make it sound all pretty and shit when it's like, oh, Ricky,
I love it. I love the, you know? I love the just a sweet half hearted.
I'm not trying to be half-hearted.
He's overcome with emotion. I can't even find the words.
All right, we're going to take a break. And when we come back, we're going to take a question from the Who's Shot Line. So I'm excited about that. Oh, we're going to talk about our home cities, y'all. That's what's up. Yes. All right. We'll be right back after we hear from another one of our Max Fun podcasts.
Hey, everybody, this is J. Keith Van Stratton, host of Go Fact Yourself, a live game show here in the Maximum Fun Network. On Go Fact Yourself, we take the smartest people we know and make them look dumb.
Paul, by the way, how much do you know about chicken husbandry?
You gotta give him that grain.
All right.
You gotta give him that grain.
And then smart again.
What future Hall of Fame pitcher for the Cleveland Indians became the first active player to enlist?
Bob Feller.
Oh, okay.
We've got me, co-host Helen Hong, plus celebrity guests and actual surprise experts.
All right, we have an expert on hand who can tell us for sure.
Is it Alan Havey?
Helen, who do we have tonight?
Alan Havey!
Alan Havey!
In the coming weeks, you can hear guests like Maria Bamford, Tom Bergeron, Paul F. Tompkins, Janet Varney, and Grant Imahara. Check us out on the first and third Friday of every month here on the Maximum Fun Network.
Welcome back to Who Shot Ya? I'm your host, Ricky Carmona. With me in the studio is...
Alonzo Duralde.
Drea Clark.
All right, this week we have got a call from the Who Shot Line, and this is great because this question kind of relates to the movie we've been talking about. So let's go ahead and listen to this call from Jackson from Minnesota.
Hey, Who Shot Ya? This is Jackson from Minnesota, and I love movies with a very specific sense of place. I want to know what is your guys' favorite movie from where you're from that really nails like where you're from and what does it right. You know, Ricky, ¿cuál es la más verdad representación de Chicago? Por favor. April, what's the most real like Michigan experience you can get in a movie? Alonzo, you're from everywhere, but you know, something from like Georgia or Houston or something like that. And guest, I don't know where y'all are from, but wherever you're from, tell me about a movie that gets it right. Okay, thanks. Love the show. Bye.
Thank
the
you,
irony
Jackson.
That the guest is from Minnesota.
Yes.
Jackson, we're probably related.
We've been talking about Jackson ever since the fire went out.
Oh, good God.
Thank you. Somebody had to get that reference.
Yes. I did not. I'm sorry. My bad. Well, he's talking about your motherland right there, Joy. So
really
I feel
is.
Like you should go first.
First off, he said y'all, so I'm suspect that he is actually from the mother country of Minnesota. We don't say y'all. You'd say you guys. Hey, you guys, what's your favorite movie, huh?
Yinz or whatever.
Yinz is Pittsburgh, no?
I think it is.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So Minnesota, the beauty of it is there's only a handful of films set in Minnesota. And I would say that the cross section of where they hit to me is perfect. So obviously the very first thing that comes to mind for me is Fargo. And Fargo is not in Minnesota. It's in stupid North Dakota. But Brainerd, which is its neighboring city and where most of that movie takes place, is a dumb name city. So Fargo it was. And not just that. So I went to high school in White Bear Lake, and there is a scene in Fargo with two prostitutes, and they meet the two where they're having sex with Steve Buscemi and
Boy.
Peter Stormare.
Yes. And old boy, as we call him. And later, Marge goes to interview them. She's like, oh, you should ask her. She's real smart. She goes to Normandale Community College, but before that, she graduated high school from White Bear Lake. Go Bears! And that is where I'm from.
Yes.
So to say that movie spoke to me is no small thing. But there are three other movies I would put. But Fargo gets a lot of it, and the Coens are from there. So
okay, Warren. I have more than one.
So okay, good.
We can circle it around.
I got it. I'm ready.
Alonzo.
I grew up in Atlanta. So you know, it's funny because now everybody shoots in Atlanta because Georgia has these amazing tax breaks. But so many movies that are set in Atlanta feel like they just could have been shot anywhere. Like it's the Toronto of the South. You know? It's just this sort of like, it's just this kind of featureless big city, you know. Like if they actually bother to show me the dome at the top of the Hyatt building that you can barely see now in the skyline that used to be the dominant feature of the skyline, I get very excited. But growing up, I would say the Burt Reynolds movies, kind of like Smoking the Bandit, and even the Cannonball Run, like they would get local places like the Old Hickory House, you know, chain of barbecue restaurants, or just the like endless highways that were lined with endless amounts of pine trees, you know.
Yeah.
That, I just get that feel of Georgia, like you can almost sort of hear the cicadas, you know. So there's something about those movies.
I love how romantic that sounds, and you're talking about Cannonball Run.
Yeah, I mean they're negligible movies, but there's a Georgia-ness to them that I feel like a lot of movies that shoot there now don't get.
I'm down with Captain Chaos, son. I don't, let's not downplay my man Dom DeLuise, yo. Let's not do that. Well, I don't know if I've mentioned this on the show before, but I'm from Chicago.
No.
What?
Jump back.
Wait a second. Wait, the second city?
In Illinois.
The one and only.
Yeah.
The one and only.
America's meat packer?
We are made of hot dogs. Now, I just right off the bat, I'm yes to all the John Hughes movies. Yes.
Sure.
Yes, yes. But that's not... those have been talked about so much. I don't really want to talk about those too much. The one that jumped to my mind right away was actually Love Jones, which came out in 97. Was directed by this guy. I have his name here. I want to give him all the shout-outs. Theodore Witcher, who is a Columbia College graduate. That's where I graduated from college.
In 97, right?
In 97, yeah, yes. The movie takes place in Hyde Park and Wicker Park. Before I moved out here to Los Angeles, I lived in Logan Square. Logan Square was just directly, like, kind of north westish of Wicker Park. I could walk to Wicker Park from where I lived, and it was really great to just see a part of Chicago that was. Are you all familiar with Love Jones, right? If I'm,
yeah,
do you know
it's
what
been
I'm
a
talking?
Long time since I've seen it, but yeah.
But it's about. I mean, it's about a movie about Nia Long and Lorenz Tate. They're poets. They fall in love with each other, and they're out just at bars. And they're not the Wrigleyville bars, which are bars that I hated going to, so I didn't go to. And there's, you know, brown people on the screen, and that's, you know, there are people on there who look like I did when I was going out. And it was...
You looked like Lorenz Tate.
Spitting image. Not even Nia Long.
I just heard about the... I'm hearing those words again.
Oh, it was so nice to see and... film and see Lorenz, a young Lorenz Tate reflecting back.
But like Lorenz Tate more like the postman is what I'm saying. No, it was just like really great to like, you know, be in my 20s and see a movie.
Yeah.
that was not the suburbs of Chicago, sure. wasn't just, you know, the north side of Chicago, just gave us showed me a side of Chicago where I was like, oh yeah, I'm familiar with that. And it was, I mean, if you watch that movie, listen to the soundtrack, Dion Ferris, Lauryn Hill, it's just black excellence hip hop of that time, like the Soulquarians, like that was just my world. And I was like, there you go, that's it.
Nailed it.
Yeah.
So may I?
I wish okay. you would, girl. I wish you would.
You gave me this baton, and I was like, oh, for me?
Yes, yes.
So my next one, which I like to think my personality sits at the intersection of Fargo and Purple Rain.
Yes! Here we go.
Yeah, and so...
And I want to be your weekend lover.
Like, the idea that somehow Prince is from Minnesota is something that all Minnesotans treasure, and it just makes life better knowing that. And I also love, like, First Avenue, which is where so much of that. I grew up going to all ages shows at first, like, or at the 7th Street Entry, which is the little club next, that's the smaller club that's a part of it, and we went to Sunday night all ages dancing. Like, First Avenue I grew up going to.
Yes.
And you also, and like Quest, which was Prince's club, and it was like,
did
spelled
he spell
weird
it
somehow.
Did
for
he spell
sure.
it differently?
I can't even remember how, but it was definitely spelled
yes.
a little weird.
Drea was in the time for 5 minutes. she was a vanity
you
six
guys
girl.
Might know me by my stage name, Morris Day. No, but I do think, like, Purple Rain is such a, when you think of Minnesota, if you think of Minnesota, there is a very correct, and that's more the Fargo side of it, the very Nordic, very, oh yeah, it's a Marge son of a Gunderson. Like, there's a quaintness to it, but there's also some, like, the Twin Cities are dope, and Prince is the coolest, and we have to have some cool to us
sure.
to have produced and held on to him. So yeah, Purple Rain I would put on my list for sure.
Hell yeah. The first time I got booked to do a show at Acme, I believe is the comedy club there, I was more excited to go to First Ave.
Yeah.
And there's I don't think anybody will ever see this picture. There's a picture of me holding that wall with, like, tears
with
in my eyes.
With the stars,
like,
yeah.
yeah. So goddamn happy. Alonzo, do you have another one?
Yeah, well, I mean, I went to college in Nashville, and Robert Altman's Nashville obviously will always be, you know, the movie for that city. But for Dallas, while this movie is not meant to necessarily reflect reality, I think it gets Texas so right in so many ways. And that would be David Byrne's True Stories, which was shot at several malls in Dallas, but also in the surrounding areas. And it gets the flatness and the weirdness and the strip malliness and a lot of that stuff. Like, it's not that much of an exaggeration. Like, you might look at that movie and think, oh, he's lampooning Texas, or he's, you know, making a cartoon of it. No, it's almost anthropological, you know, and it shoots. There's a big fashion show sequence that happens when people come out dressed as, like, brick walls and stuff. Shot inside the North Park Mall, which is also where Robert Altman, again, shoots Farrah Fawcett's fountain nervous breakdown in Dr. T and the Women.
Oh, my God. Dime jump.
and you know, believe me, but a former mayor of Dallas once described the city as a series of malls connected by inadequate highways. And that is the city. And so those two movies, but especially True Stories, I think really nail what that area is like.
I'm enjoying Alonzo Duralde's trip across the South.
Hell yeah. yours were the answers I was most interested in, because I was like, I guess
he's a moving target. Yeah.
And I'm gonna go off of what you just said there, reflecting reality. The other one, the other Chicago movie, it's
Nothing in Common.
Adventures in Babysitting is
okay. I was like, wait, for real? Oh my god! Ah, oh, fine.
It's Steve James' Hoop Dreams.
Oh,
I mean,
yes.
I mean, if you want to know,
yeah,
what,
that's
sure.
legit. Yeah.
If you want to know what Chicago is like, watch Hoop Dreams. It's a documentary. It's about we start out with them when they are in eighth grade. It's shot over 5 years. Start out with these two kids in eighth grade.
Arthur?
The other dude's name is, I'm sorry?
Arthur,
yes, thank you. Arthur Agee. Whoa, son!
That's right.
Whoa! Arthur Agee and William, I don't know your last name, but thank you, William Gates. Yo, my man, see that? Casey, super duper producer. Arthur Agee, William Gates, two kids in high school. and they're trying to get into college. And, I mean, they're trying to get out the hood and live out their dreams of being a basketball player in the NBA. And it's, I mean...
One of the greatest documentaries ever made.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hands down.
Absolutely. Like, that Chicago. Like, there's some people who will watch that movie and they'll be like, oh, it's so sad. And it's like, man, that's how
it's
we grew
America.
Up. That, exactly. That, like, if you don't see yourself in that movie, I don't know what to tell you. Like, it's, well, Hoop Dreams is so great, and it's one of the best documentaries ever made, and you should watch it. You want to know about me? Watch Hoop Dreams. Except, like, they don't want to play basketball. They want to be Eddie Murphy.
Beautiful.
Ward, hey, thank you, Jackson, from Minnesota, for calling in with that question. Thank you to everybody who always calls in. We have all of your questions. We have them recorded. Keep calling in with them. Make sure you keep them under a minute, no more than a minute, so we can play them on the air. And how do you get in touch with us? Well, it's real easy. Call WSY-803-1664. Just make sure that you keep your calls under a minute so we can play them on the air. That's what's up, y'all. All right, it is almost time to go. So let's hit these people with our staff picks, y'all. Drea.
All right, I got one.
Hit it.
And it is based on, it is nothing like the tone of Leave No Trace, but in thinking of films with a female writer director, and this one has a female protagonist, that I actually was surprised this film didn't make a little more impact when it came out, which was a couple years ago. It is an independent film called Edge of 17, which stars Hailee Steinfeld and Haley Lou Richardson and Keira Sedgwick and Woody Harrelson. And I loved it. I'm drawn to teen movies anyway. And, you know, Ricky just mentioned John Hughes, and that's, you know, obviously the sort of gold standard that most teen films are trying to hit or emulate.
The white gold standard.
It is. No, very true. The white gold standard. And this is definitely a white film. Her romantic suitor is this super cute Asian guy.
We get an Asian stud to sort of, as though to erase Long Duck Dong from the collective.
It really does, yeah. It's like, and he is the dreamiest McDreamy.
Oh, God,
like,
totally.
I had such a crush on this dude that I was relieved when I looked him up. He was 31 when
Whoa!
They shot this film. He is, like, very believably a high school. Oh my God, he's so cute. Anyway, it's not why I bring it up, but Edge of 17, one of the things I like about it is not just because it has a female protagonist, but she is a character who suffers from depression and is incredibly angry. And I don't think that you see female characters of any age but like that, but a teenage girl who's so angry and that it alienates her and she can't really process it. I think it's incredibly relatable and rarely portrayed. And I really dug this film and think it's just really strong overall. And like that I was so invested in it when she gets her, you know, she's all pissed about some dumb thing that like should be just kind of walked away from with her best friend. But I was so on her side. I'm like, yeah, never talk to her again. We don't need her. Like, I was right there, you know what I mean? And it's on Netflix right now. Like, it's a newer release and available for people. So I would check Edge of 17.
That's what's up. Alonzo.
Well, since Rhea has previously recommended movies that she's produced, I don't feel too bad about recommending a documentary that I'm in.
It is now streaming
on Amazon Prime. The Fabulous Alan Carr. Alan Carr is a fascinating show business figure. He was a manager and a publicist and, super flamboyant in a period where people were still not saying that they were gay in public. And he had this incredible career of highs and lows. Like, he produced Grease and he produced Broadway's La Cage aux Folles, which were like both giant hits and, you know, won awards and all that stuff. He also produced Can't Stop the Music, which is, you know, the fiasco musical starring the Village People.
I don't know that.
Wow.
I like that.
Is it like Steve Guttenberg in it?
Steve Guttenberg and Caitlyn Jenner, when Caitlyn Jenner was not Caitlyn yet.
Okay.
And Valerie Perrine, directed by Nancy Walker. It is a legendary flop. And he also produced the 1989 Academy Awards the ones that opened with Rob Lowe and Snow White. And so given that we are barreling towards what promises to be a complete shit show from the Academy this year, where they're still threatening to not give them all out during the show, and there's no host, and who the hell knows what else is going to be, what better time than to relive Oscar's previous biggest fiasco night than looking at this really fascinating documentary. It just, his career is interesting, his life was interesting, and the people that director Jeffrey Schwartz gets to talk about him tell a really great story. It's so worth it. It's just a fun, you know, kind of showbiz bauble. It's streaming for free on Amazon Prime. The Fabulous Alan Carr.
That's what's up, yo. Before I get into my staff pick, last week my staff pick was Horror Noir, which is the documentary about black horror and the history of it. It's on Shudder right now. And I was like, yo, I was at this panel, and Keith David was there, and Tony Todd was there. And I just mentioned all these dudes that were there, and I didn't mention the people who made the film, who like had something to do with making the movie. So that was Tanana Reeve, who was great. Yeah, I mean, I'm being professional right now. Right? I'm being professional. Tanana Reeve, it was based on a book by Robin Means Coleman. And the Twitter website, Graveyard Sister, and her name is Ashley Blackwell. Shout out to them. They're the ones who actually fucking put in a lot of the work to get that film made. I can't, like, afterwards listening to the episode, I was like, Ricky, come on, man.
Damn it.
Come on, man. What is wrong with you, bro? But my stat pick this week is, it is a Chicago movie. And it is, shout out again, thank you to Jackson for making me sit in front of Amazon Prime today and be like, oh, you know what? What do I want to recommend to people? Brian De Palma's The Untouchables, yo. Brian De Palma's The Untouchables.
He puts one of yours in the hospital, you put one of his in the morgue.
That's what's up, yo. See
that's
that?
That's a Chicago
see
way.
See what I'm saying? Freddy Krueger coming through. Coming through. That is to answer a little bit more of your question, Jackson. That's a great history on just like the corruption that was Chicago back in the day. Except
not
it's
still, anymore.
Not no. anymore. Not anymore. No, we figured it all out.
Widows.
But told in like this cool pop art Brian De Palma kind of way. The wardrobe is Giorgio Armani. Mm. The score by my man Ennio Morricone. And Alonzo, you talking about the Oscars and cinematographers not getting no love. I mean, one of the best looking movies, in my opinion. It was shot by Stephen H. Burham. So many Sean Connery quotes in that movie.
And he won an Oscar too, right? For that,
he won the Oscar for that. It's so great. The Battleship Potemkin sequence that takes place at the Chicago
stairwell.
Thank you.
I think Brazil had one the same year.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
But The Untouchables, it's on Amazon Prime right now. So if anybody wants to know more about Chicago as well, watch Love Jones, watch The Untouchables, fuck with Hoop Dreams, y'all. All right, next week we are going to be watching Alita, Battle Angel, and Ingu Kang will be joining us.
Oh, goody.
Oh, and we got some reviews for you. Yo, shout out to everybody who leaves us a 5-star review. If you leave us a 5-star review, we're going to read that mug on the air. And we're going to start off with King Richard III here. They say, I listened to this show during my 22-mile-long runs training for marathons.
Woo-hoo!
That's what's up. Since WSY began, I have dropped about 12 minutes off my marathon PR and lost 20 pounds. If science has taught us anything, the only reasonable conclusion is Who Shot You's diverse and inclusive critique on cinema makes you a better athlete.
Well, I've always thought so.
That's what we talk about. When these aren't recording, that's what we're talking about. They go on to say, furthermore, this conclusion appears to hold up despite some of RC's whack opinions on great movies and musicals.
Take that, RC. Yeah.
You were my boy, King Richard III. I mean, I lost you. All in all, listen to Who Shall Ya and your life will be changed. Thank you, King Richard III.
Tilda Rose from Sweden says, I love this podcast. I have nothing in common with the hosts, but I love it. My kids and my husband are shook by the swearing, but I just say, look, that's their choice.
Sorry.
I expect you to keep your language clean when in public. Totalmente me encantan las partes españolas que me acuerdo del tiempo antes y que aprendí a hablar como ustedes. Buen hablo como... hablo Rio Platense. I'm not sure what that means.
When hablo Rio Platense. I think she's saying she laughs a lot.
Oh, okay, good enough. I'll take it. You infiltrate my life, and just a few minutes ago, my husband suggested that we watch Bohemian Rhapsody, and I responded, you know what? Alonzo thought they ignored his homosexuality, but if you can keep that in mind, we can watch it. Alonzo quien? Thanks. Gracias. Tak. Oh, but you probably won't see this since I'm on a Swedish account. Oh, well. Wrong, Tilda Rose.
We got
you. We saw it, and we thank you for that. Thank you.
And we chose the right person to read it. All right. Hanabatake.com?
Sure.
That's that Minnesota accent.
Oh, Hanabatake. For some reason, my review disappeared. I love the hosts of this podcast. Diverse backgrounds. Thoughtful and funny analysis. I'm excited to listen to them each week. And great guest host. Recommended. Exclamation marks. That was nice.
Yeah, that was nice. Thank you to everybody who left us reviews there. That's what's up. Keep doing those, y'all. Tweet about the show. Retweet the show. All that. You know, post on Facebook. It helps get the word out. Helps make the show grow bigger. So please keep doing that. Thank
Facebook.
You very much.
Facebook.com/groups/WhoShotYourPod, I think.
See? No, you're right. You're right. Yeah, say that shit with confidence, son.
It's not written in front of me. I'm going off track here.
Ladies and gentlemen, that was right off of the dome piece right there, as we say. If you have a comment or suggestion about this week's show, you can tweet at us at WhoShotYourPod. You can send us an email at WhoShotYou@MaximumFun.org. Again, the WhoShot line is WSY-803-1664. Drea, Alonzo, thank you for being here.
Thank you. It's always a pleasure.
Our producer is Casey O'Brien. Our senior producer is Laura Swisher. This is a production of MaximumFun.org. And your what's up?
Twist.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.